Hello, this is Marcia Clenard with the News Gazette, dated February 20th. We will begin today's reading on the front page with the article headlined, It's His Honor, 10 Questions Champaign County Sheriff's Deputy of the Year. Among the perks of Deputy Brian Malik's job, getting to see every nook and cranny of the county he calls home. When you go to work each day, you have no idea what you're going to do, says the 35-year-old Champaign Central High School grad who puts 100 to 200 miles a day on his sheriff's vehicle patrolling rural Champaign County. On any given day, I might find myself one night in Ivesdale and the next night around Ludlow. Being able to drive around this great county is fantastic. The Savoy resident, who spends his days off with his wife, Erica, raising their two children, Bailey, 5 1/2, and Grayson, 2 1/2, was recently honored by the Champaign County Farm Bureau as the Deputy of the Year. Afterward, he sat down with our Tim Mitchell, and the conversation with him continues. And there, the questions are 10 questions. And the quote at the headline is, You have to be prepared to be dedicated. Staff writer Tim Mitchell spoke with Deputy Brian Malik following Malik's recent honor. Did you always want to be a police officer? It was always in the back of my mind. My dad, Steve Malik, worked in the sheriff's office for 28 years, and he was an inspiration to me. But I didn't hear too many stories from him until after I started working in law enforcement. He went to work each day, and I knew what he did. He didn't push me into a career in law enforcement. I first worked as a program coordinator for the youth club in Mahomet, but I always thought in the back of my mind that one day I would apply to work for the sheriff's office just like my dad. Next, I worked for the Parkland Police Department for 3 1/2 years, but even then I didn't want to come to the sheriff's office. There are still a lot of people who work here in the sheriff's office who also worked with my dad. Were you involved in any activities at Champaign Central? I played guard on the basketball team and I played defense on the soccer team. I think that sports help a person to develop discipline. It teaches you the value of hard work, something that is important in my career in law enforcement. What attracted you to a career with the sheriff's office? I wouldn't like a job where I had repetition, doing the same thing every day. It would get boring. But what attracted me most to this job is knowing I can affect other people's lives in a positive manner. And sometimes you don't know you help somebody, but it is the best part. I am honored knowing that people think I am doing the job up to the level that allows me to help them. What do you remember about your very first arrest? It was a gentleman who got into an argument with another classmate at Parkland College. He ended up pulling a knife on the classmate, and I ended up arresting him for disorderly conduct. I was extremely nervous putting handcuffs on somebody for the first time. What's been the biggest arrest of your career so far? It started out as an Urbana Police Department case, but Sergeant Dave Sherrick, Lieutenant Brian Menenga, and myself arrested a man who had a $500,000 warrant for domestic battery. We got some information about where the man was, and the three of us were in a foot pursuit to catch him. What do you see as the biggest crime concern in Champaign County? Definitely domestic violence. That's always an issue. I respond to a domestic situation somewhere in the county on a daily basis. And gun violence has been a concern recently, especially in the cities. It is very bad. We've got a street task force working on knocking that down, but I think domestic violence is the biggest thing. What poster was on your bedroom wall as a kid? Frank Thomas's. I personally am a Chicago Cubs fan, but I have a lot of admiration for Frank Thomas. The fact that he could hit home runs. How is real life law enforcement different from what we see on television or in films? Anything on TV cop shows is going to be different from reality. The process doesn't play out as fast in real life as you see on television. They can solve a complex murder in an hour on TV, but the police on TV kick a door in just because somebody doesn't answer the door. But there is one TV show that is pretty realistic and pretty close to what we do, and that's Chicago PD. What's your favorite vacation getaway? We go to New Buffalo, Michigan, and stay in a vacation home. And what's your advice for young people interested in a career in law enforcement? It is a hard job, and you have to be prepared to be dedicated. This isn't a job where you just show up and go through the motions. It's a lot of hard work, and you will find yourself working with a lot of good people in law enforcement. If you want to do it, make contacts in law enforcement and get out and volunteer at a local youth club. The next item is also from the News Gazette, Monday, February 20th, page 4. Man ticketed for leaving accident, byline Tim Mitchell, Urbana. An Urbana man who allegedly crashed his vehicle into a building has been cited with leaving the scene of an accident. According to an Urbana police report, Joshua Ray Olivero, 34, who listed an address in the 800 block of Kerr Avenue, drove a vehicle into the side of a building in the 600 block of Oakland Avenue, Urbana, at 2:05 a.m. Saturday. Police said the driver parked the vehicle and fled the area. Officers located Olivero and arrested him for leaving the scene of an accident. No injuries were reported. The next item, also on page 4, Crime Stoppers. Officials asking for tips to solve January killing. Also, Tom Mitchell byline, Urbana. Champaign County Crime Stoppers and the Champaign County Sheriff's Office need help solving a homicide. Deonta Rozier, 21, of Champaign, was found dead in a field in the 5000 block of North Lincoln Avenue between Leverett Road and Fort Harris Road north of Urbana on Tuesday, January 3rd. Investigators learned that he had been shot to death. If you have any information regarding this crime, call Investigator Ed Moody at 217-384-1213, reference S17-0021. You may also contact Crime Stoppers at 217-373-TIPS or 373-TIPS.com or through a free app for smartphones called P3 Tips. Tipsters are always completely anonymous when contacting Crime Stoppers. All tips submitted are electronically stripped of any identifying information and processed by a third-party answering service, not law enforcement. Cash rewards of up to $1,000 are paid for information leading to an arrest. Tipsters will never be asked their names and are given a secret code number to use when checking on a possible award. This next article is from the News Gazette, Sunday, February 19th. The front page article and the headline is, "Whatever Happened to the First Computer on the University of Illinois Campus Was Big, Loud, and Couldn't Hold a Candle to Today's Smartphone." But at the time, the 5-ton, 10-foot-tall Iliac was considered a breakthrough of astronomical proportions. A modern marvel is the headline. A Julie Worth byline, Urbana. The next time you pick up that supercomputer in your pocket, take a moment to consider its famous ancestor at the University of Illinois. The Illinois Automatic Computer, dubbed Iliac, went online in 1952, one of the first computers built with a design that is now ubiquitous in the computing world. It was a 10 by 10 by 2-foot monster weighing 5 tons. Its 5 kilobytes of memory consisted of 2,718 vacuum tubes and 40 cathode ray tubes, plus more in later models in a giant rotating drum. And its speed? It's hard to describe in today's terms, with the average smartphone faster than the supercomputers used in 1980 when computer science professor William Gropp was a graduate student. "Machines are literally over a million times faster than when I started in my career," said Gropp, now acting director of the National Center for Supercomputing Applications at the U of I. The Iliac could add two numbers in 180 microseconds, at about 2/1000th of a second. Not bad for the 1950s. By comparison, a single processing element in a computer chip today can do it in a third of a nanosecond, half a million times faster for each operation, Grop said. Some chips can perform 1,000 of those at the same time, and computers have many chips. A processor in a typical PC can do a few billion, quote, flops, unquote, floating point operations per second. But Iliac holds a prominent place in computer history. It was the first automatic electronic digital computer built and owned by an American university. With others of its generation, it helped set the direction of computer technology for decades to come. And the Iliac line launched computer science at Illinois on a path of innovation in architecture and high-performance computing that continues today, Grop said. These were literally some of the world's first supercomputers, said Professor Rob Butenbart, head of the U of I Department of Computer Science. It's why we became the world power in supercomputing that we are. Exhibit A, Blue Waters, the latest supercomputer to be built on campus, which operates at a petaflop speed, 1 quadrillion floating point operations per second. Exhibition B, the HAL 9000. True, it was fictional, but the mellow voice and sinister computer in Arthur C. Clarke's novel and film 2001, A Space Odyssey, officially became operational on the U of I campus on January 12, 1992. The reason Arthur C. Clarke picked Illinois for this amazing machine in his fiction was that it was the place he thought would produce such a thing, Grop said. It's fitting, then, that the remnants of Iliac are held both on the U of I campus and at the Computer History Museum in Mountain View, California, near San Francisco. The lobby of the U of I Siebel Center for Computer Science has several display cases with components from Iliac 1 and 3 of its descendants, Iliac 2, 1956 to 1968, Iliac 3, 1960 to 1968, and Cedar, sometimes referred to as Iliac 5. A memory drum from Iliac 1 is also part of an exhibit at the Spurlock Museum on campus. Next, I would like to read another article from the front page of Sunday, February 19th, News Gazette. The title of the article is Finding Some Good and Bad, Champaign-Urbana Fire Safety Initiatives. As friends of Laura Wills prepared to pay their last respect Saturday evening to the woman who perished in a fire at her home, Champaign firefighters chose to honor her their way. They handed out smoke and carbon monoxide detectors to approximately 30 of her neighbors Saturday morning. We hate to see anyone die of smoke or fire anywhere in our community or the nation, said Fire Chief Gary Ludwig. We don't know if the smoke alarm would have saved her or not. We just know there was none in her home. At 4:39 a.m., February 10th, several callers phoned 911 about a fire that apparently started in the garage of the single-story at 503 Swigert Street. Arriving moments later, firefighters found Ms. Wills, 53, in a bedroom. She died of smoke inhalation. Firefighters have not said what may have caused the fire. What they are shouting from the rooftops, hoping that people will hear and act on, is that smoke detectors can save lives. Joining them Saturday in that effort were four members of a Champaign family who lost their son and brother in a fatal fire a year ago. We're finding some good in bad, Joy Sheehan said of their reason for helping. On March 26, 2016, her son, Christian Sheehan, 23, died in a fire at the house he rented at 1802 Cypress Drive, Champaign. Also killed in that fire was Sarah Schuler, 26, who was spending the night with a friend of Mr. Sheehan's. Like the fire at Miss Will's home, it started around 4:15 a.m. I can't believe people don't have smoke alarms, Joy Sheehan said. Your sense of smell shuts down when you sleep. She, husband Rob Sheehan, and their daughters, Olivia and Grace, helped firefighters knock on doors to stress the importance of having a working smoke detector. They plan to do the same on Cypress Drive again on March 25th in honor of Christians. Firefighters were interrupted in the task as they put out another house fire on East Grove Street about 10 a.m. Deputy Fire Marshal Randy Smith said the National Fire Protection Association recommends one smoke detector per bedroom in each home and a combination smoke and carbon monoxide detector on each floor. Older guidelines suggested one detector in a hallway near bedrooms, but Ludwig and Smith noted that if a bedroom door is shut and fire starts in the bedroom, it can take too long for a remotely placed detector to sound. Champaign firefighters spent a little more than 2 hours Saturday on two blocks of Schweigert and the nearby 1100 block of West Columbia Street, installing 18 smoke alarms and 10 combination smoke carbon monoxide units. Residents had been alerted in advance by city officials who put informational hangers on their door. We will leave each home owner with a manual for each kind of detector and a set off each in front of the occupant so they can hear it and know what it's like, said Deputy Fire Marshal Janet Maupin. The alarm sound for the combination smoke carbon monoxide detector is slightly different than that for the smoke detector unit, she said. For those residents not at home Saturday, the city asked that they call the fire department to make an appointment for installation of the free detectors. Ludwig said an anonymous donor gave the department $5,000 for the alarms, and the Kid Company, an alarm manufacturer, also donated 200 smoke detectors. I would now like to read Tom's Mailbag, the feature in Saturday, February 18th's News Gazette. Tom Kasich answers questions on our website. The first question is, what left a good portion of Southwest Champaign without power on Saturday night, February 11th, for about 20 seconds? Ameren, Illinois spokeswoman Marcelin Love said the outage was the result of an equipment failure at one of its substations in Champaign. Without recent upgrades in the distribution system, she said, the outage would have been longer than 20 seconds. A brief outage occurred on our 60 kV system Saturday evening due to an electrical equipment capacitor bank issue at our Southwest Champaign substation, she said. The equipment failure also caused a circuit breaker at our Oak Street substation to open briefly, causing a temporary interruption to the system. The automation in our system worked flawlessly, cleared the problem, and re-energized the system. Second question. Green Street from Wright to Goodwin is in horrible condition. Is it in a plan to repair anytime soon? It is a poor reflection of the University of Illinois as it is in front of the Illini Union, Tom says. Yes, that's part of the big $44 million MCOR multimodal corridor enhancement project aimed at improving transportation systems in the Champaign-Urbana core. The segment of Green Street you refer to is part of Project 1, for which construction is slated to begin next month. Ducey Construction Company will host an MCOR pre-construction open house from 3 to 7 Wednesday at 24 East Green Street, Suite 19, Champaign, just east of the Canadian National Railroad tracks. The event is open to the public. Construction plans will be available for viewing. Third question. Last May, you wrote about Ebertfest and the Illinois Marathon being held on the same weekend in April this year because of a new event to be held the last weekend in April. With less than 3 months until this new event, has there been any word as to what it is? Tom says, this question is asked a lot, said Jane DeLuce, president and CEO of Visit Champaign County. No announcement yet. We're still betting on a return to town by Garth Brooks, who is on tour and doing a lot of big events. Next question. I have two questions about Green Street Realty property. When will construction start on the apartment and commercial building at 205 East University Avenue? And how will the new lofts on Logan look in downtown Champaign? Chris Saunders, president of Green Street Realty, said that both projects are close to development. The 205 East University Avenue project will begin construction by early summer, he said. We're kind of on a third plan for it, he said. Our modular construction company backed out on us at the last minute. They couldn't get the job done, or we'd be building already. We are redesigning that as a stick built. It won't be modular construction. It will be a four-story, 117-unit building with some commercial development on the ground floor, he said. Most will be studio and one-bedroom units. Chinese investors are still involved, he said. Those guys are still behind it, but we're the ones building it and partnering with them and running it, he said. Lofts on Logan at 11 Logan Street, at one time a Goodyear shop, will start construction this fall, he said. We don't have a rendering yet, but we're going back and forth about whether it will be a four or five-story building. The first floor will be retail, Saunders said. We're excited about getting something downtown. Those will be loft-style units with 10-foot ceilings, brick accent walls inside. It will be one and two-bedroom apartments. We're expecting a little more play off of downtown Champaign. Saunders said he hopes that some of these people living in bigger apartment complexes on the edge of town maybe will come downtown if there are options for them. There are just a few boutique-style, above-business places for them now. I would now like to read some local state news from Saturday, February 18th, News Gazette. The first one is an area update. Jarling's reopens after month of renovations. Champaign. The Oreo snowstorms and cold fudge sundaes are being served up again at Jarling's Custard Cup after a month-long shutdown for store improvements. Jarling's closed in January, so its new owners could renovate restrooms that have been closed for decades and update equipment to help fill customers' orders faster, said co-owner Tom Siegel. We had hoped to be open all year round. When it got to the end of December, we had too many improvements to make, he said, and business slowed over the holidays. Rather than have them drag out, we decided to go ahead and finish them up. The store reopened on February 1st with its regular hours of noon to 10 p.m., 9:45 p.m. for the drive-through. The exterior restrooms are on the southwest corner of the building and hadn't been open to the public since before Jarling's was located there, Siegel said Friday. The store also got a new cooling cabinet to handle more toppings, including Twix and chunky fudge bits, moved or eliminated some equipment to improve the workflow, and installed a new point-of-sale system with iPads to make cashiering easier, he said. One of our big goals this year is to do the best we can to speed up service. The next item, also from Saturday, the local and state, is Roberts Public Library. Facility needs repairs to reopen. The Roberts Public Library's future remains up in the air as a group of residents tries to raise enough funds to make some needed repairs to the facility that has served the community for the past decade. Closed since October following the discovery of rotted floor joists underneath a stage on the library's north end, the facility at 108 East Green Street, this is in Roberts, downtown, needs about $5,000 in repairs to reopen. If not enough funds are raised by this summer, there's growing concern that the Ford County town of 362 people may lose its library. I will fight tooth and nail to raise the money, said Sarah Hornback, who chairs the six-member committee of residents that is organizing the fundraising. Since being formed in November, the fundraising committee has held three events. Prior to last week's bake sale, about $600 of the $5,000 needed has been raised, Hornback said. The next item is the Elks Lodge of Savoy. Harry Potter Trivia Night on schedule. Teams and individual players can sign up for Harry Potter trivia event set for February 28th at the Elks Lodge, 903 North Dunlap, Savoy. The event is a fundraiser for the American Cancer Society. Doors will open at 5:30 and trivia questions will begin at 7. The evening will also include a costume contest and a 50-50 drawing. The cost to participate is $20 per person, $15 for students, or $150 for a team of 8 to 8 members of all ages, according to Jill Rannenberger, who has organized the event. Earlier during the regular monthly meeting, the board had voted 3-3 on granting the permit, requiring President Carol Arsenault to cast the tie-breaking vote. She voted no. If he is agreeable to moving the bar, then we should just request him to move the bar, Trustee Patricia Allen said at the time. It has to be moved. It took the LOTA Big Mark less than 48 hours to make the changes and earn approval. The concerns of the board centered around minors being able to be in an area that served alcohol. Usually people will go in to either gamble or drink, Trustee John Boone said. They go to do one or the other. The next item is Rosecrans Health, outpatient program open house set. Byline Champaign. Rosecrans will hold an open house from 4 to 6 p.m. Wednesday at its 1801 Fox Drive facility for families to learn more about an adolescent substance abuse intensive outpatient program. The program focuses on providing recovery skills for teens who remain in their own home environment, the agency said. RSVP to Sandy Fox at sfox@rosecrans.org or call 217-693-4624. And now we go back to Monday, February 20th, News Gazette, a sports story, Illinois basketball. The headline is Illini Fighting for Big Ten Seeding. Bunched up standings offer opportunity. Iowa City, Iowa. Illinois moved up just one spot in the Big Ten standings following Saturday's 70-66 victory at Iowa. Tied for 11th with Indiana, the Hoosiers hold the tiebreaker given their 16-point win on January 7th in the only head-to-head matchup between the two teams this season. But four regular season games remaining on the schedule give Illinois similar opportunities in the bunched-up Big Ten. The Illini are just one game out of eighth place and 2.5 games out of the top half of the conference. Illinois had its spot in the opening day of last year's Big Ten tournament locked in by this point in the season. A top four finish and the corresponding double bye is out of the picture, but the Illini, given a strong finish, could avoid that Wednesday start. And so ends part one of the News Gazette. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the News Gazette, February 20th, Monday, but also includes Saturday and Sunday's paper as well. Thank you. Please stay tuned.